We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Branko Marchetich. He is an assistant editor with the Jacobin magazine, a freelance journalist, and has a piece in the Jacobin current issue, I believe it is, Passing the Baton. Barack Obama spent 8 years expanding the national security state. He will soon hand its full power to Donald Trump. Welcome to the program, Branko.
Hi, Sam. Thanks for having me on. And good work on getting through my last name.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. That is that almost, yes, it is. I think it's one of the rare times I nailed it.
Sorry. The Serbian last names are a nightmare. I understand everything.
All right. Well, I have trouble with just about every ethnic. Ethnicity ranging, you know, I can mispronounce Wilson in the right context. Let's go through some of these things Obama will be handing over to Trump. I mean, passing the baton. There is literally a passing the baton ceremony. I know that has taken place in the past. Sometime the day or two after the inauguration, it's usually with national security advisors. In this instance, Michael Flynn will be taking over. Let's start with the drone program, if you want. What exactly is Donald Trump going to have waiting for him when he gets into the White House?
I mean, essentially, he'll have the legal authority to unilaterally order the assassination of pretty much anyone that he wants, that he declares is a terrorist or a threat to national security. I mean, there are rules around how the president can order, drone assassinations. However, those rules aren't really, they can be rewritten by a Donald Trump. If you look at kind of the history of the Obama administration's kind of legal wrangling around how they, around how they defined what exactly the powers that they have to order drone strikes and that kind of thing. A lot of the times it's not so much kind of driven by limits to the law. It seems more driven by how can we kind of reinterpret the existing law? How can we kind of sort of look at what authority we have now and sort of, interpret it as expansively as possible. So there's no reason that Donald Trump, once he finally gets inaugurated, couldn't also, easily reinterpret these things into a much more kind of much more expansive way than Obama has, which is already pretty expansive because, you read my article. One of the kind of biggest, I would say, scandals that doesn't really get talked about that much is the fact that the Obama administration targeted and killed a U.S. citizen without due process. It was a straight up, basically an assassination of a suspected terrorist who also happened to be a U.S. citizen. Now, you would think theoretically that goes against ideas like due process, the idea that everyone gets a fair trial before they are punished. Certainly the idea of having a unilateral kind of ability to sentence anyone to death is I would say troubling at the least. But that's just me.
Well, no, I mean, I think, it's not just you. I mean, I think there's a... and we've talked about this program about the assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki and his son, and there were two other Americans, American citizens, my understanding too, that we assassinated. But what really I think, in terms of the expansive nature, and we should make it clear here that what was released in 2014 officially and what had been reported on sometime earlier was the processes in which the target list was drawn up on, I think it was Terror Tuesdays. I'm not exactly sure what they call, whose nickname that was. But the days when the president was basically handed the list, I don't know if I would call it a rigorous process of determining. But let's stipulate that it was a rigorous process. But there was no new law that was passed, right? It was just the OLC, basically the Office of Legal Counsel, writing briefs as to why it's legal. And with very limiting factors, it seems to me, they created a process, but it was not necessarily, it's not clear to me that it's contingent upon that process. And tell people what Eric Holder had said in 2013. I don't know if it was in the context of a press conference or a specific question that was asked him, but I think this is pretty serious because, well, obviously it's serious, but it's... It's actually a letter he wrote to Rand Paul, who was asking about this. Just remind us of where Holder was on this. And, you know, I don't know where Jeff Sessions is on something like this. Tell us what Holder had to say back in 2013.
Right. Well, Rand Paul wrote a letter to Eric Holder basically wanting to clarify what exactly the limits of this power of drone strike was. You know, if the president can order the unilateral killing of a U.S. citizen overseas, can he also do it on U.S. soil? So we asked him a question. Holder basically said, you know, this would never happen, hypothetically. However, he can certainly foresee a situation where the president in some extreme circumstance might have to order the drone killing of a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil, which means you're basically bringing the war home. And even while Holder, you know, made sure to say that this would be a rare thing or a nearly unheard of thing, this would not be something that happens all the time, just the fact that according to him, there was a legal justification for this. Should be concerning for anyone who thinks that Trump is a fascist dictator in waiting, or you know, is ready to abuse his power at a moment's notice.
I mean, let me read some of the language of it, because he said, while it was entirely hypothetical and unlikely to occur, it is possible, I suppose, to imagine an extraordinary circumstance in which it would be necessary and appropriate for the president to authorize the military to use lethal force within the territory of the United States. Now, in the event that something like that, if there was a decision that the government took to do something like that or wanted to, it is beyond a shadow of a doubt, right, that this is going to be cited. Like, here is one of those citations is going to be Eric Holder, Attorney General, it goes without saying. And this is, you know, again, some of this, I guess, is just sort of a warning, but it's also sort of just saying, like, next time we're in the situation, folks, you may want to make a little bit more of an issue of it at the time, because you never know where this is going to end up. I mean, let's move forward to the use of the AUMF. This is the authorization for use of military force. It has been used in ways that, well, I don't know if wasn't necessarily projected by the Bush administration. Maybe it's been used in those ways exactly as they wanted. But it's certainly, without much questioning, has been used widely by the Obama administration after having been used by the Bush administration to get into at least two major wars.
Right. I don't have the exact language of the AUMF in front of me right now, but from memory, you know, it says that the U.S. has the authority to go to war against the perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks and their associated or allied forces. Now, the problem is that the Obama administration has expanded what exactly these associated forces are. Al-Qaeda obviously doesn't exist anymore. If it does, it's in a incredibly weakened state. At the very least, the Obama administration makes the point constantly that Al-Qaeda is decimated. And yet it's used the AMF to declare war on ISIS and take U.S. forces into a variety of different countries, including Syria and Iraq, based on this. And you've also got recently, the Obama administration, amazingly expanded yet again this authorization, because they use the AUMF to declare war against Al-Shabaab, which is the terrorist organization in East Africa, which recently pledged its allegiance to Al-Qaeda, thereby making it an associated force. Now, a lot of these associated forces, quote-unquote, ISIS, Al-Shabaab, they didn't exist in 2001. So it's hard to see how they can be, rightly classified as associated forces of the perpetrators of 9/11. And yet, now Donald Trump is going to be, when he becomes president, is going to be in charge of numerous wars, I suppose, including one in Africa. Obama, at the same time that he was telling people that Donald Trump was a unique threat, has given him an expanded license to go overseas and bomb and kill.
And there's really not much we're hearing about limiting the AUMF. I mean, ironically, I guess Tim Kaine was one of the louder voices on that in this country. But it seems unlikely that we're going to hear anything from a Republican-dominated Congress about this. They were certainly happy to concede their authority to a Democratic president. There's certainly no reason to believe that they're not going to do the same to a Republican president. And I don't know. The fervor in which this administration seems to really want to get involved in that area is a little bit disturbing. Let's talk about the press and the secrecy and just the level of classification that has grown. I mean, much of this, it seems to me, is part of a sort of a deep state apparatus, but it doesn't, I am not aware of anything that Obama did in any way to slow the roll of this stuff. And that's, I think, probably, that's an under-exaggeration.
No, I mean, he did the exact opposite. So, I mean, in my mind, the Obama administration's, the two terms of Obama have been sort of a string of broken promises, and in many ways, betrayal of what he initially campaigned on. Obviously, in terms of domestic politics, Obama has, in some sense, he has kind of lived up to certain things he promised. But when it comes to foreign policy and when it comes to subjects like civil liberties, he's gone in the exact opposite direction of what he said. And so with things like secrecy, Obama campaigned on having the most transparent administration in history of all time, he said, because that was a reaction against the Bush administration, which was viewed as incredibly secretive and incredibly non-transparent. And then Obama came in and he's put forward one of the most secretive administrations in history. And Obama also campaigned on protecting whistleblowers. He said that whistleblowers were heroes, that they had to be protected, that one shouldn't take punitive action against them. And once in office, Obama has become the most extreme anti-whistleblower president in history, literally in history. He's worse than Nixon, which is incredible to think. We're talking about a Democratic president, and he's worse than Nixon. The Espionage Act, which is the World War I era law that was passed to basically prosecute German spies during the war, has now been used by Obama more times than every other administration before him put together. And he's used it not against spies, not against, you know, people conducting espionage, certainly not against, you know, any Germans who are still, you know, pining for the days of the Kaiser and trying to leak secrets to Germany on for that reasoning. He's used it against mostly whistleblowers and journalists and in very petty ways in a lot of cases. And I think the reason for that is not because he's necessarily, you know, a mustache-twirling evil man, but more because he's so, and his whole administration is so focused on keeping a tight lid on leaks and is so secretive that they figured their best bet was to just absolutely steamroll anyone who made any leak that was disfavorable to them whatsoever. And so you have guys like Stephen Kim, who leaked a report to a Fox News reporter, which people inside the administration referred to as a quote nothing burger. They were openly, they said this was just a totally pointless story that then was not important in any way. And the Obama administration, threw the Espionage Act at him, ruined his entire life. I think he lost all his savings. He had a breakdown. His wife left him, because he was going to potentially go to jail for a very long time. And that, that's just one case. There's a variety of other cases. Obviously, Chelsea Manning, who Obama could, by the way, pardon before he leaves office. If Obama truly believes, as he said when he campaigned, that whistleblowers are heroes, he could easily pardon both Chelsea Manning, who is going to be in jail until she's, I think, 60 or so, and he could pardon Edward Snowden, who Holder has said committed a public service by leaking to the public what the NSA was doing. Whether that happens, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the few things that it seems to me that Obama could do at this point. I want to talk just before we get to the few things that Obama could do in any way. I mean, I wonder if he wakes up in the morning and, calls John Brennan and go like, man, did we before we get to that conversation that he has with Brennan, let's talk a little bit more about the surveillance state. I mean, just within the past week, there was an update to Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which allows federal authorities in this country to basically expand their authority to engage in hacking and surveillance. The proposal, I think, was passed to Congress, and Congress decided to just let it go. We've got expanded powers for the FBI to hack and surveil. Has there been any really sort of, I guess, consistent or any attempt to sort of roll back anything since the Snowden leaks? I can't think of anything terribly significant that has really fundamentally changed.
There was a law that was passed that prevented the warrantless collection of phone records. But when it comes to, when you think about, things like emails, internet traffic, webcam data, or pretty much any, internet electronic data that we produce on a daily basis, that stuff is still being vacuumed up wholesale. Our conversation right now is probably stored somewhere. It's being recorded and stored somewhere by the NSA. The websites that we went on this morning, they're probably stored somewhere. So there hasn't been a lot of movement, even though there was a lot of public outrage. There hasn't been a ton of movement. There have been some changes, but the worst stuff is still there. And one of the points I made in the article is that you know, when, you know, a lot of people talked about how Trump is a thin-skinned, paranoid narcissist, which I don't disagree with, you know, obviously. But, you know, if we want to have a look at what an administration with such a person in charge of it looks like, we can go back and look at the Nixon administration, which, you know, Nixon was known for being incredibly paranoid, incredibly thin-skinned, who saw many people as his enemies and that he wanted to destroy. Nixon, of course, had the full force of the, you know, 1970s era U.S. Government behind him, which he used, you know, maybe most famously against Daniel Ellsberg, a whistleblower who leaked the Pentagon Papers. And Nixon wanted to discredit him, so he sent people to break into a psychiatrist's office to find embarrassing information that could leak to the press. Now, that was Nixon. You know, can you imagine Nixon having access to Ellsberg's emails, you know, potentially the websites that he's visited, you know, over a certain period of time, his phone calls, being able to switch on Ellsberg's webcam. You know, that is, I mean, if you want to talk about finding embarrassing information to discredit somebody, that's the motherlode. And so that is what Donald Trump will get. Donald Trump, who, you know, who's been very open about the fact that, you know, he sees the press as his enemy, who has a philosophy that, you know, if somebody goes after him, he will hit them twice as hard. You know, whose entire campaign was kind of premised on this idea of just going after and people that attacked him, and you know, the whole thing with Ted Cruz's wife. You know, at one point he threatened to quote unquote spill the beans on her, whatever. I have no idea what that means. I think anyone does, but and perhaps it didn't mean anything. Yeah. But the fact that he was willing to make that threat doesn't exactly bode well.
We're looking at an unbalanced Nixon plus technology. I mean, it's basically right. What we're getting here. And probably less intelligent. And I would add, with people surrounding him who seemed even less inclined to maintain any norms. I mean, we have moved so far down the road from where we were with Nixon that it's, I mean, gosh knows. I mean, honestly, it. All right. Well, so with all this said, is there really anything? I mean, you know, at the end of the piece, I mean, I know that editors usually say, like, you got to put something at the end on what you know, like, how does this get better and how you can change it? It seems to me that Obama has been racing to try and close Guantanamo Bay. I don't think they're going to be able to because they just have nowhere to put. They're statutorily prevented from putting these prisoners in the United States, as far as I can tell. There may have been some other sort of more executive action moves that they could have taken. It seems to me to cut the funding, perhaps for Guantanamo. But there's still, at least as far as last count that I was aware of, 60 prisoners in Guantanamo Bay. I would imagine that we're going to see that number rise. And we've seen that 8 years later, getting people out of that facility is extremely difficult. So anybody that Trump puts in there is going to make it that much harder to close this thing. We have, like, basically a permanent gulag down there now. Is there anything short of those pardons that you talked about that Obama can do at this point with the apparatus? They can't say, like, hey, everybody throw out the memos that we had in the OL, you know, the Office of Legal Counsel, so they can't find them and cite them. I mean, what can he do? Is there anything?
I mean, it doesn't really look very good. The Republicans control Congress even without, you know, at this point. And getting anything, any law passed would be difficult. There are libertarian-leaning Republicans in the Congress, like, Rand Paul, Justin Amash, who are concerned about this stuff and have opposed both Obama and now have spoken out against Trump on these issues. But they're not, at least as far as I know, a big enough force to really, you know, team up with the Democrats to take it on. The problem is that for so long, the Democrats not just deprioritized this kind of stuff, but they also they actually went in the opposite direction and helped perpetuate it. You know, Nancy Pelosi helped kill a bill a while ago that would have limited NSA surveillance. You know, and Obama, even though he tried to close Guantanamo, kind of, I think he also, his administration realized that picking a fight with the Republicans over this stuff was going to damage his domestic policies, damages, you know, the chance he had to actually pass meaningful domestic legislation. And so he decided it wasn't worth it and just let this stuff go. Now, that's all well and good. But of course, the problem is that, you know, Donald Trump became president, which was, by the way, not exactly an outlandish idea. You know, one of the points you make about, well, I make in that article is that civil libertarians like Glenn Greenwald and Conor Friedersdorf, they were saying that, you know, even if you think Obama is the most virtuous man alive, even if you like the fact that he will, you know, play fantasy football and dance and, you know, like Stevie Wonder and everything, he's a cool guy. At one point, someone who's not so cool will inherit that. And you have to be able to put some limits on these programs in case that happens. Unfortunately, the Democrats never did. Obama certainly didn't. And now there's not really that much. The pardons is one. I was actually reading an article recently by, I'm going to get this name wrong, by Pratap Chatterjee, I believe is the name. And he outlined certain things. I mean, one thing that he could do is release a lot of these kind of secret laws and memos that kind of govern a lot of the stuff that, to be honest, like people don't know. The public still doesn't really know a lot of the justifications or even the laws that that are allowing security agencies and everything to do a wide variety of things. So we're kept in the dark. Obama could declassify those and release those. He could release data about people that the drone campaign has killed. It's better actually to read that article to get an idea. All of those, however, are not going to really go too far in actually reining in the national security state, which I think probably now is a little bit too late. One other thing I guess that he could do is I saw the House just passed the National Defense Authorization Act. Now, for years, the National Defense Authorization Act has had a provision in there that allows the president to indefinitely detain people. He could insist on an amendment to take that out. He hasn't. So I presume that either Obama just wants to keep that provision for Trump to use because he thinks it's incredibly valuable, or perhaps, you know, the rhetoric around Trump being, you know, an unprecedented threat to national security that the Democrats and Obama and Clinton were putting forward during the campaign was sort of just disingenuous rhetoric. I mean, those are the only two.
How could Obama get that amendment out? By just threatening not to sign it, unless it is?
Yeah, because he did that earlier, a few months back. He refused to sign. It went to him and he said, I'm not going to sign it because of this and this and this. And then they went back and they've amended it again. So he could do it. I imagine it would probably create some kind of fight. But, you know, surely if Trump is as bad as we all assume he is, it's worth a fight. I mean, at the end of the day, what is Obama doing right now anyway? I mean, you know, he's got a couple months left. I mean, I know what the last couple of months of the job that you're about to leave are like. It's mostly just you know, spending time on the internet.
Packing up your box. Packing up your office, that type of thing. Well, I mean, I guess it's something to keep an eye out on. Branko, thank you for joining us, March to Teach. Folks should just read this and actually, frankly, you know, print it out, put it on your refrigerator. assuming that you're allowed to read things after the next 4 years, and there's an opportunity for a Democratic administration or a non-Republican one, keep this in mind, folks. I mean, this is a piece that was important to write, Branko, because we did get warnings like this, and I don't know. I keep hoping that maybe this is just sort of a 2 or 3 week just trial run. Like, this is just we're just kidding you, and we wanted you to this is like some hoax that people are playing on us, but it doesn't feel like it. It's not going to work out.
Like, there's long-term implications from these policies, and they'd be like, did you see Obama with those science fair kids in the White House?
That's right.
Are you kidding me?
Well,
of course he's going to be great.
Branko, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.